She's an actress, a model, and an activist. Kira Omens grew up in a mostly white suburban town of Virginia. But she was born thousands of miles away.
I was born in 1995 in the Guangdong province in China.
As a child, Kira was unaware what made her stand out.
I was a really normal kid. My parents were very normal parents. There didn't seem to be anything weird or different about that.
But when Kira starts to mix and mingle with other kids and their parents in school,
your parents would come in and bring cupcakes or something for your birthday that was weird to some people, that I didn't look like them.
She would be bullied.
People would pull their eyes back and make them into tiny little slits like they were Asian eyes.
She became self-conscious.
I went to a very predominantly Caucasian school, and so being Asian was very different, first of all, and then being adopted was another layer of that. There was a lot of racist comments.
Adopted, rejected at birth, Kira speaks with me about how she has imagined and reimagined her past, transforming herself from a shy and insecure child to become a vocal activist and a rising star in the entertainment world. I'm Mabel Chan, and this is One in a Billion, a podcast about Chinese millennials in America.
I was discovered on the side of a bridge, and then I was taken to a hospital for a week before being put into the orphanage. So I'm not entirely sure what happened.
Kira has no clues who put her there. Was it her mom? Her dad? But not knowing only fuels her own fantasy. In a blog she wrote for the website Dear Adoption, she narrated one of those fantasies.
My birth parents became the most interesting, unsolved mystery of my life. My daydream starred them as the king and queen of China, and I was the lost princess. Or they were famous movie stars who did not want their public images tainted by having a baby. Whatever the fantasy, the story culminated in my Asian birth parents appearing on my doorstep, begging for forgiveness, and pleading with me to accept them back. I always politely turned down the offer because I love my parents and siblings more than anything. But I was only six, so yes, I would kindly accept compensation for their actions in the form of Barbies. I know these stories are wild. I blame Disney for glorifying abandonment.
I do think that imagination is what a child must have to understand the world around him or her. In your case, it is empowering, isn't it?
Yes, I think that I was a very, very imaginative little child, and that did help me digest a lot of what was going on. Like, personally, I just don't believe that a woman could raise a child, her own baby, for 4 months without developing that deep, loving, motherly attachment to that baby, and then having to leave the baby on the side of a bridge for a stranger to find is just, the idea of that is just heartbreaking. So when I was a child, I think that imagining my parents as the king or queen of China or as just something absolutely ridiculous was helping me.
Bigger than life, right?
Yes, absolutely.
When did you realize you miss your birth parents?
I'm not sure if I've ever really missed them so much as been curious and wanted to learn more about them, just to learn more about myself. I've never truly felt like there was a void I had to fill. I think that, I mean, my family right now is my family and they're my entire world. And so I've never really felt that there was a piece missing.
Even so, Kira had millions of questions, especially about her mom.
Most days, I am terrified of finding answers. Some days, I wonder if she thinks about me. I don't like to think about the gut-wrenching moment that a woman knew she was looking into her baby's eyes one last time, and then walk away.
In this blog she wrote about overcoming odds, she describes her guilt.
The life that I have in the United States is the only life I have ever known. Sometimes I feel guilty for not honoring my birth mother's sacrifice in some way. Most times, though, digging up my past seems scary, depressing, and unproductive. Should I search for my birth parents? Would they even be happy to see me if I did? Are they dead? Should I even return to China for myself? Should I spend more time learning Mandarin? Am I losing touch with my cultural roots? If I was, does it even matter?
She found no answers, of course, but she has found love. She was adopted by two loving parents who welcome her into their family with a younger brother and sister. But still, kids can be cruel. Kira wrote about the relentless bullying against her and her brother, who is adopted from Korea.
Kids will announce to the class that you only get good grades because you're Chinese. Kids will squint their eyes into slits to imitate you. Kids will butcher an Asian accent to sound like your ancestors. Kids will badger you because you're not pretty enough. Kids will stop speaking to you because being your friend makes them uncool. Kids will imitate your brother's mannerisms and call him names to make others laugh. Kids will tie your brother to a fence and hit him because it makes him feel powerful. Kids will ask why your real parents didn't want you. Kids are capable of unimaginable racism and entitlement and violence. Being a kid should not excuse actions that are wrong and hurtful and damaging.
How does she cope? How would any 13-year-old cope?
I begged my parents to quit Chinese dance lessons. I shoved the adoption books under my bed. I stood in silence as my family celebrated my adoption day. I started laughing at Asian jokes in an attempt to distance myself from my culture. My journals, that were once filled with dreams of returning to China, were replaced with sketches of myself with blonde hair and a normal family.
How did her parents cope? They pulled her out of the upscale Catholic school and put her in a local public school, much more diverse.
I don't remember a ton from that time period. I try to block it out in a lot of cases. I do know that my parents have always been of the mindset that your differences are what make you special and they're something that should be celebrated and not scrutinized. Fortunately, I had very good parents and a loving support system. My family is great. I have a wonderful younger brother and a younger sister who is my parents' biological child. So I would say that I got through elementary and middle school socially just fine.
But still, she felt insecure about her Asian face.
I was very, very shy, painfully shy and closed up, and some of that still lingers sometimes when I'm in a group of people. I'm just like, oh my God, no one wants to hear from me. I truly believe that I began developing confidence and finding my own unique voice when I was in high school and began taking theater classes. I was using theater as an outlet for expression. Acting was very cathartic for me, but also it was very thrilling in being able to step into another character and really develop my empathy and learning about other people. And I knew that that was something that I loved and something that I hoped I would be able to inspire other people through performance.
Her outlet became her passion. Kira continued to develop her skills, and eventually, she got into the Governor's School for Visual and Performing Arts, a highly competitive summer intensive program at the university. Only 20 girls and 20 boys are accepted in the entire state of Virginia.
I started to see other sides of the industry itself. I knew that it was a challenge, but I also knew that I was up for the challenge and that I was capable of developing a work ethic to be successful in that field.
You mentioned that you were a very shy kid, right? You were not speaking up, you were basically quiet. So when was that leap? I understand that you talked about going to governor's school or the theater class, but someone's got to spot that you had the talent.
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely 100% my theater teacher in high school. I think that he saw a lot of potential in me and we got along very well and he challenged me in a lot of ways, really helped me break out of my shell. He got to my core very quickly and helped me know and learn that message that my parents have constantly been helping me with. And my parents also have a lot of faith in me, but obviously they want me to be successful.
Success began with acceptance. First, it was self-acceptance. Kira had thought through her own story of abandonment. It is an unknowable past, so why dwell on it? Then it was a double-edged sword of bullying that kicked her down and amazing parenting that built her back up. Through it all, it is Kira's seriousness about proving herself that keeps her pushing ahead. 2 years ago, she was crowned the Pacific Miss Asian American of 2015, the first adoptee ever to win that title in the largest Asian beauty pageant on the East Coast.
Actually, my Chinese dance teacher, she is wonderful and has truly been one of my mentors culturally, personally, professionally. And she mentioned that pageant to me. And at first I was like, oh no, I am not a pageant girl. I do not like high heels. I cannot do that. It was very intimidating. And I actually went to go see the pageant. I was also scouted by the PR manager for that pageant at one of my dance performances, ironically, who asked me to go give it a chance. And I saw those girls on the stage and just thought, they are so smart and so talented and beautiful. They have the whole package. And in my mind before, pageants were just like, oh, all these girls are just airheads and they just care about hair and makeup and dresses and who looks the best. But for this pageant specifically, I thought, wow, this really represents everything that I want to be as an Asian American woman. And it would be such an honor to stand on that stage and have all these opportunities and have a platform to express and to be a voice for intercultural understanding. And I thought that was a really wonderful way for me to start opening doors.
And it truly has opened doors. Kira's public Facebook page has over 3,000 likes. She has dozens of modeling credits, even though she's only been professionally modeling for 3 years. And her biggest break so far?
This is one of my favorite stories and one of the best experiences that I've had as an actor so far. I was cast as the lead in a romantic comedy this past summer, and I had a wonderful experience. The script was amazing. Everyone working on this project was absolutely stellar and ridiculously talented. It was such a pleasure to work with all these people. And afterwards, I was talking to the director. When he was first writing it, he had envisioned an actor with blonde hair, blue eyes playing the lead. But he had seen my audition tape and he really wanted to cast me from that and just thought like, oh no, this is the actor that I want to cast in this part. And I was so blown away that he had this previous idea of what he wanted, but then after seeing my tape, he changed his mind. And that really, really touched me because that never happens, I feel.
Well, you must have heard about this sort of defense, if you will, in Hollywood or in entertainment industry in general, that they want this mass appeal. Right? They want everyone to sort of swarm around a certain look. So the blonde and the blue eyes are still sort of like the gold standard. Is that true?
I think that aspects of that are changing, just in the way that Hollywood would glamorize being super thin as being beautiful. I think that in the way that that's changing, hopefully, to being healthy and being strong is beautiful. I think that any ethnicity or any hair color, eye color, like there are beautiful people across all ethnicities.
Kira has been presenting herself as a role model for young girls. She started teaching acting, Chinese folk dance, and Taekwondo. She's on the speaking circuit. And as her online following grows, she understands that with more public attention comes more personal responsibility, particularly for the adoptee community.
I hope that my voice is very inspirational to people and very approachable because I want people to be able to relate to it and find pieces in what I'm saying in themselves. So I hope to be very informed and also compassionate and a very confident voice.
She's effusively grateful about the support from her parents for allowing her to follow her dreams and go as far as her talent and hard work would take her. She's deeply aware that many children in China who start in circumstances similar to hers aren't so lucky.
There are many issues in China, one being that adoption was very successful financially for them, and so babies were stolen so that they could be adopted and make money, which is absolutely horrific.
Just 2 years ago, 37 newborn babies were rescued by police in Shandong, China. These babies were reportedly fed on instant noodles and leftover vegetables by traffickers. Baby boys could attract a selling price of between $8,000 and $10,000, while baby girls, not as valued in Chinese society, are sold at much lower price. poverty strikes many provinces in rural China that forces women to sell or abandon their newborns for money. It's a new form of crime that's triggered a massive crackdown.
It's very weird to hear those on the news and know that I was sort of a part of that. I think that it's a lot for me to wrap my head around that, like, oh, I was a child, like I could have a younger or I could have an older brother. And in China, there is a preference for baby boys. And it's a lot to think about. I think that for a lot of my fellow adoptees, it's very difficult to think about all of that and know that we were a part of it almost.
As an adoptee activist, Kira keeps driving home this message.
My main message is that every story is different, and also that the past does not define you.
This message has been spreading further and further as Kira's online presence grows. She's still learning how to navigate her public image.
I'm still very much a perfectionist and trying to push myself and to make the right decisions and make the right call. I also have trouble like remembering that like I'm young, there's still time. You're allowed to make mistakes.
Kira just turned 22. She's accomplished quite a bit for her age. And what I'm struck by is her grace and gratitude for her good fortune. She tries to give back and pass around what she's been given in life to her family and her adoptee community. We may never know who her birth parents are or why they gave her up, but in doing so, they inadvertently gave her a brand new life in a brave new world. She was noticed and picked up from the street since birth. Since then, she keeps getting noticed and discovered by the right people at the right time. And through it all, she keeps her message strong in her Dear Adoption blog.
It is my wish that any adoptees who are hearing this and struggling with feeling different and isolated will know one thing. Adoption doesn't define you. Your past does not dictate the future. You have hundreds of little, weird, honest sides of your personality that make you, you. Your adoption is only one puzzle piece of what makes you a beautiful, complex human being, full of love, loss, laughter, imperfections, dreams, and stories.
Now, we want to hear from you. Send us your comments, pitch us a story. Just go to our new website, oneinabillionvoices.org, and find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In our next episode, how do you defy social pressure to excel as a woman in science and technology and to emerge as an innovative artist and an interactive designer? That is Xiao Xiao, an MIT graduate with boundless ideas. Stay tuned for our next episode. One in a Billion is
Pallavi Katamasu,
Eric Liao,
Brian Latwinowicz,
Sarah Zhu.
It is an independent production of One in a Billion Productions, a nonprofit educational media group in Kendall Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts.